Hi everyone, welcome to Potluck Food Talks, the show where we talk food, fire, and the beautiful chaos of kitchens, all from the cook's side of the pass. I'm Rocky Bilbao, the Eye of the Tiger, and I'm here with Ivan Draco, cold as your walk-in fridge, sharp as your slicer. And today we're talking conflicts between cooks, silent wars, shouted orders, and all the spicy tension that doesn't make it onto the menu. But first, Potluck Food Talks, hearts on the line, it's service time. What would you say about emotional control in kitchens? Does that even exist, or are kitchens more about emotional suppression?
I think cooking is a very emotional thing. Cooking, man. Cooking.
I mean, Hoffman was a very emotional guy.
It's a weird combination, no? It's like emotion in the kitchen. You have like so many kitchens that also we've experienced are so high in emotion, but like so much, you know, it's like something goes wrong. Somebody comes at you and goes like, you fucking piece of shit, you're worthless. And then like 5 minutes later, they'll explain something to you. It's like, you see how beautiful the fish is. You see if you lay it in a pan like this. Oh my God, it's fucking amazing. It's like, it's everything at like 150 all the time, you know? And cooking is so emotional. Like food is so emotional. And so is the pursuit of perfection, no? Which is what a lot of people are trapped in. No?
Ivan Brehm, he did a comment in one of our reels, and he said like that our reels are starting to become like a chef gossip column.
I love that.
That every week we bring something out of a chef and we make like a gossip shit show about it. And this week, I wanted to bring to the table a video I saw of Xavier Pellicer. You know, Xavier Pellicer is probably one of the best chefs in Spain. He's a Catalan chef. He was chef at the Racón de Can Fabas. Then he opened a back and he made 2 stars there. And then he returned to Racón de Can Fabas as a executive chef until Santi Santa Maria died. So, and he trained in France with Jacques Maximin and some top names of the French old school.
Mm.
Anyways, like recently he was talking on a podcast and they asked him, he was just saying like, you know, like I've changed. Back in the days, if I would see the pastry chef throwing half an orange to the garbage, to the bin, I would say, fuck you, you don't have a day off this week anymore. So he would take the day off because of that. And then he would say, yeah, you know, but this was back in the days. Everybody was doing it. You know, it was the old school. Now I take the orange and I eat it myself. And, you know, like, so I've changed. I'm a better person now. For me, there has always been like limits, lines that you don't cross, one of them. I mean, and that place, people would work there like 16 hours a day, you know, like, and then taking the day off just to rescue half an orange from the trash bin. One is messing with people's spare time, especially in a place where you have these hours. Another one would be taking money from people, you know, like, for example, the things like, you're not getting tips anymore or like that. Unless it's something like really established. I work in a place, if you came late, there was not the tip of the day. And that would be like $50 a day just in tips. So nobody was ever late. You know, like, and if you came late, you knew that was the rule of the place. And the other one is, of course, personal, you know, like curses. Like, it's not the same saying this food is shit and saying you're shit. But I mean, like, taking spare time, I think that's too much, man. I don't know. What are your thoughts about this episode?
You sent it to me a while ago, and I thought it was very interesting because you can see, I thought the reply from the interviewer was very interesting. And then the shift.
What did the interviewer said? I don't remember.
He was saying, he was like, I'd see him like very cocky, you know, like I'd see him throw away half an orange. I'd take away his day off with like the subliminal message of sort of like, I care so much about the produce that I would punish the person if they disrespect the produce. And then the interviewer says to him sort of like, and you're just saying this like so calmly, like it's the most normal thing that you're like taking away his day off. You think that's like normal? And then he's like, no, I mean, let me tell you, because he realizes like in what room he is in. And those people are the most scummy. The ones that like, they start talking, they realize they're not talking to the right audience. So they fake. Right. And they're like, no, I've changed. You have to understand. It was the old day. Kind of like fucking mansplaining to her, you know, sort of like you wouldn't understand. Actually, this thing that seems really horrible in any scenario, it was actually quite OK and normal. It doesn't matter if you think that it's like you wouldn't get it. So let me explain it to you. But at the same time, I've changed now. Now I just eat the orange myself. Kitchens are such a weird little microcosm because now it's getting a little bit different, but for such a long time and still today, kitchens have been this closed off little microcosm where you are a little bit apart from reality. So things would happen and like rules were in place, attitudes were in place, treatment was in place, that if it would happen in many other scenarios, it would be an absolute scandal. And somehow, because you're locked away in this windowless cellar somewhere and you're there day in, day out from the morning to night, it's almost like Lord of the Flies, you know, where the children get stranded on the island and this like weird fucking hierarchy starts forming. It's exactly like that. And it's shocking what it does to people. It's shocking also what it does to people when suddenly the wrong person gets a little bit of pseudo authority. Crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Phil, do you recommend podcasts to your friends?
All the time. The best way of showing friends that you care is recommending a great podcast to listen to.
I agree. If you're listening right now, you should show your love by recommending our show to all your best friends. It will make them happy. It will make us happy.
Potluck Food Talks. Tell your friends. It will make the world a better place.
Yeah, like, and there's also this thing in play, you know, like I know this because I worked at that restaurant and that's, like, I mean, I wouldn't say the name of the place when we did the line episodes about it because, you know, I didn't want it like to generate some bad name for the place because at the end of the day, it's a place that I respect its cuisine and its influence and everything. But I mean, like, he did it like normally, like, oh, yeah, I would do this, you know, like. And another thing that I think is that this guy was executive chef there like 10 years ago. This is not like, it was the old school back in the 80s with Marco Pierre White and, you know, like, no. We're talking about 2010, something like that. You know, like, it was not so long ago. And when I was there, we would get those kind of punishments. For me, that's definitely too much. Well, how much do you think that like these conflicts in the kitchen are actually about food, or do you think it's about ego, fear, insecurities? What do you think are the main drivers for something like this?
It's a lot about ego, I think, and what I feel like is one of the main reasons for these situations to happen is the loss of control. I feel like when people, if you think of a really good manager, right? For me, if I picture like the perfect manager in a kitchen, is a manager who never gets loud. He's just exacting discipline and order and teaching people just by being super straight and calm, you know? Like sometimes you have to be stern, you have to be direct, sure. But punishing people, like, I mean, it depends what you mean by punishment. Sometimes like things are so bad that like you have to say like, hey, look, man, you know, you're not going to get tips today or like whatever because I don't know, like whatever, right? I think it's the lack of control. I think, you know, when I look at myself, I am by no means a perfect manager. Very, very far from it, you know? The times when I find myself get loud is when I lose control, when I feel like the situation is slipping out of my hand and I can't direct it anymore by just talking to people and like being normal. But that's not the fault of the people necessarily. It's my fault, you know? I think that as a manager, you should always look at yourself. You should always consider yourself the cause of the problem in one way or another. Of course, you're going to have people who make stupid mistakes and they hide things from you. And you told them maybe a million times already. You cannot put all the blame on those people, even though what they're doing is wrong, because you are failing. Like, you need to find a different angle to solve the solution. And the angle cannot be, I'm going to give you so much shit that you break. maybe it's literally, it's just removing that person from the team. Calmly sit down. What is the point of like getting loud? At some point, you know, if I have a chef who repeatedly comes late, smokes in the walk-in, steals, right? Stealing is a big offense now, kind of hides things that he knows he should rectify and it causes a big problem. After a couple of talks, like, you should sit down with that person, maybe say like, hey, I don't think this is the place for you. Maybe you should move on. Because at the same, also, you're sacrificing so much of yourself. You're not doing yourself a favor. I see so many chefs that are going like 150 miles per hour every single day. And they kind of love it, you know? They make this like, they've convinced themselves in their head that this is good, but it's not, you know? We've somehow managed to convince ourselves that working 12, 14, 15 hours every day without a stop is good. It's not. There's nothing good about it. You're going to burn out. And you're not going to do a good job. You're not going to do a good job cooking. You're not going to do a good job managing people. You're not going to do a good job having a relation to front of house or the guests because you're tired. You're worn out.
But do you think like the there are some like high level things that can be achieved with only 8 hours a day?
I think it depends what kind of compromise you want to make, you know? But if you say that one of the things that is important to you is to take care of people, then I generally don't think they should work more than 9-10 hours a day. And 9 to 10 hours is still a lot for a lot of people. For me, it's like, it's an okay work day, you know? 9 hours is like very fine. And if you say, look, I genuinely believe that I want a team that has a good life and a good job, then if you come up with things that require more than that, then you need to rethink that thing or you need to hire another person if you really want to do that thing. You know, I feel like often we only see a couple of solutions. We see sort of like, okay, just fucking power through. It's kind of like, well, maybe don't power through. Maybe if you keep having a conflict with this person, for example, going against it again and again and again and clashing again and again and again is not the way forward. You see, you're not progressing. So maybe you need to take a few steps back, detach, and rethink the whole thing. Think like, okay, hold on a second. This is clearly not working. And I know it's clearly not working because I'm not getting the result that I want. And at the same time, I am so worn out. Like, I this is only a limited amount of time where you can keep that going, right? And ideally, you want to keep going forever and enjoy what you're doing. So I think that a lot of people are sort of like, oh, you have to, you can only achieve this level. It's kind of like, well, maybe this is exactly one of those things that we just think is like that, but that actually we just have to think about from a different angle.
Have you ever caught someone stealing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I caught people doing everything. No, I caught people stealing. I've caught people physically abusing others. I caught people stitching other people up. I caught people extorting money from staff. I caught people drinking at 10 o'clock in the morning in the changing rooms. I remember in Hong Kong, man, like there was this one guy and he was a fucking nightmare. And then at one point, and this is a good example, actually. So there was this one guy and he had only been working there for like a couple of weeks. And I had taken on that job like very, very recently in that time. And he was not performing really well. And I was getting angry at him. I was giving him shit. I was being very strict. I was being very stern. Hey, this is shit. You can't do this. You can't do that. And he was like spiraling out. One day he would be like, oh, I'm sorry, chef, I'll do better. And the other day he would be like super aggressive. I was just doing my thing. I would be like, no bullshit. Like either you're here or I won't accept it. And then one morning I'm in the kitchen. I'm looking for this guy and I go into the changing room. And in the changing room, usually after a certain time, nobody goes in there. After you change, you're in the kitchen, nobody goes back in there. And I go in there and he's kneeling in front of his locker and I'm like, hey, what are you doing here? And he turns around and he's got like a liter can of beer in his hand and he's just chugging like doo, 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 doo. And I realize like, oh fuck, this guy has a real problem. This guy is really like, he has an issue. He's an alcoholic. And then it's kind of like, I like took him aside and I was like, hey, I felt really stupid in that moment, you know, because I feel like, man, I should have felt that something's wrong. But I just went like a fucking train, no? Like a bull. I just kept going forward and forward and forward. I realized that this guy is actually dealing with something. Now, I'm not his therapist, nor his kindergartner, nor his mother. But as a human being, the least thing that you can do is sit down with him and be sort of like, looking, listen, obviously this is not okay what you're doing. What can we do to make this better? You know, like, can we, do you need something? Do you need some help? Do you, like, can we facilitate something for you? Like, obviously you can't be hurting the business like this, and I can't let you work when you're drunk. This is not okay. But at the same time, like, how do we move forward from this? And this happens a lot. You know, I've had a lot of situations where I was so caught up in my own head chef, like, mania. And I was like, I take somebody to the office and I sit them down and I start giving them shit, blah, 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 blah. And they start crying. And I'm like, what's happening? And then they open up about a personal problem. And they say somebody in their family passed away and stuff. And you sit there and you think to yourself, what the fuck am I doing here? You know, like, this is really not that important. It's really not. And these are all people who are all dealing with shit. Most of them are trying. Some will not try, like, sure. But I think it's important to get away from this mania, because at the end of the day, we're just fucking cooking food, you know? It's not that deep. It's not life and death.
I also had one in a place that I worked at. Suddenly, we started realizing that there were drinks disappearing. But, you know, like, in the middle of the morning, you know, and suddenly we would go to the bathroom for staff. And in the trash bins, there would be like 4 cans of beer, freshly drink. You know, like this person would, you know, like, go to the bar and like drink 2 beers and go back to work like nothing. And she would like really normal, was like a super nice to deal with person, you know, like, but yeah, it had like this compulsive drinking problem, you know, like. Can you imagine, like at 10 a.m., you already had 6 beers, you know, like, and you're just starting your day. It's like,
yeah, I mean, some people need that to function normally, you know, like, and that's the crazy thing. I mean, when it gets to that point, then it's really, really serious, no? And you're like, wow, I had no idea.
And also stealing a place where I worked, you know, like, suddenly there were these 2 bartenders that they were really, really good, you know, like they were even competing in bartender championships and everything. And they were preparing because they were going to represent the restaurant for this thing. And one day the head chef sees that they were like going to like a storage room too often. So she felt something weird. So she went there to this storage room, opens it, start looking around, looks like behind something and finds like, you know, like 20 sous vide bags of lamb and everything, you name it. Like, so they were having a dinner party that night and they were just stashing everything.
Crazy.
And they got immediately fired, of course. And
of course.
It was a shame because everybody liked them and they were really talented and they fucked up like that, you know?
Yeah, it is a shame. Like, sometimes, you know, you're kind of like, man, you see somebody in a difficult position, and at the same time, you're like, yeah, but like, I cannot let you put other people in danger and like steal money, because that is money. It's pure money. Like, you know, I cannot let you do that, because I'll also be liable for that. So sometimes it does get tricky, yeah.
What about when you have like a fucked up situation, like a personal constant disagreement that scales up with somebody across weeks, you know, and it's something, it already becomes like a war, you know, like an open war. And it's like, either you fuck me or I fuck you. Let's see who's next. And, you know, like sometimes this kind of dynamics build up until somebody clashes first, you know, like.
Or snaps, yeah.
Yeah. So, have you had those ones?
Yeah, unfortunately, way too much. I feel like you have that almost everywhere, you know?
That's very interesting, right? Like, and it's pretty much, you know, I was recently, I had like a course on handling conflicts and these kind of things. And it's very interesting because, like you say, this is extremely common in kitchens, yet at the same time, nobody has the tools to deal with it. Everybody's dealing it from an absolutely ego kind of, either you fuck me or I fuck you, so I will fuck you. And the other one thinks exactly the same, and you never sit down to actually take your pride away and reach a consensus just to make it a win-win instead of a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know, like, But that never happens. I've never seen it. You know, like, it's always like, okay, we hate each other. We're going to hate each other all the way through.
Forever. Right? And 10 years from now, we will still hate each other.
Oh, this is my corner of the kitchen. Go away.
Yeah, I think it's because of this weird dynamic, you know, because you have a kitchen with a brigade system and you have ranks, right? So we're not like, we're all equal, but we're not all equal, you know, because I'm a senior CDP and you're just a CDP. And it's, you know, and like that really gives people the feeling like they get the like little senior in front of their CDP title. And they feel like, now I have some sort of authority on you. And if you don't do what I say, I will come after you. And it's so fucking silly, you know? And as you like progress through those ranks, you have that everywhere, you know? You're an apprentice or a commie, like everybody, there's not really that much because you're a commie, you know? But then when you become a demi chef, it starts getting tricky. And then a CDP. And then between sous chefs and CDPs, tricky. But you know, like, I mean, now it's like, it's a little bit more comfortable because I've been a head chef for so long. And you start dealing with things differently also, I think. Like if you become a head chef, you start becoming competent, you start dealing with it differently. Because if something like this happens, it's kind of like, what are you trying to do? Like there's no scenario in which you will somehow win this conflict. Like, let's just not have a conflict. How about that?
Yeah, but I was also saying, like, when they're between the same ranks, because for me, though, those have been the more violence in my case. You know, like, you remember this guy, Max, you know, like...
Yes, the first person I thought of, actually, yeah.
You know, like, and we would have, like, this thing, and at the end of the day, somehow, the chef realized something like this was going on, and he fired him. So he was out, you know, and that's how he solved the conflict. Like, this guy... it's becoming a problem, and he's not a good leader, he's not a good chef, yet he believes he is all of those things, and he's not by far. That's what I think, because it was really, you know, like, also you build this carcass, you build this thick skin around you, you know, like, and you don't allow, you know, like the conflict to get inside you. But I mean, it's not that easy, you know, like sometimes...
Ideally you do, you know, because it's so silly. It's really so silly. But yet we get carried away by it so much. I mean, this guy was a very particular example because, like, the way that I remember him, he was picking a fight with everybody. Like, he didn't make friends with anybody. He also took a lot of liberties, you know. He wasn't, like, he was still in his, he was only there for a few months.
He would take this authority and talk about this from this... superiority in knowledge and also in the way to do things. I think that's very, very crazy, you know, like entering a team with that attitude and expecting it to go well. It just speaks of how dumb you actually are, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. I think that it's a good reminder to stay humble, you know? As I remember a few situations with him where he like came in. And I had been an apprentice there, like on the same section for about a year, I think. And we had to make the celery puree, which sounds very simple. But the head chef, he had a very specific way that he wanted it done. You make a stalk with all the offcuts of the celery root. It had to be very intense and clear. And then you sweat the celery not too much, with not too much fat. You add just enough broth. You cook it with a cartouche, like very gently. And then you make it had no dairy, basically only a little bit of butter. And that's it. And then I remember this guy at one point, he looked at me and he was like, what are you doing? That's not how you make a puree. And then he just like took it away and started, he's like, I'm going to show you how to make a puree. And he starts like sweating onions and garlic and celery, like browns it, you know, and like adds like, I remember he adds a fuck ton of cream.
And would reduce it like a dulce de leche.
Exactly. And I was like, oh my God, like, and I try, you know, I didn't really want to say too much, you know, because this guy was my chef de party. And I was like, hey, but I was already sick of his shit. So I was like, hey, chef actually has a very specific way that he wants this done. And he's like, doesn't listen to me, you know, because who the fuck am I? I'm just an apprentice. Makes this fucking puree, blends it, tastes it. He's like, it's amazing.
And it would taste like shit. You know,
it
like,
tasted
that's also
like shit.
So crazy.
It was horrible. Yeah.
This guy would do this kind of things and he was so proud of whatever he did. And it was just not good, you know?
No. And then like an hour later, the chef came and he tried the puree and he freaked the fuck out. He was like, who the fuck made this puree? He started giving me shit and I was like, well, here we fucking go, you know? And the guy, but then that's also a sign of character, you know? He didn't say anything. He wasn't like, chef, I'm sorry, it was me. I wanted to make it like this. I'm sorry, I didn't realize. My bad, you know? You just let me take the shit.
He saw you taking shit and he kept quiet. You know, I also remember once, you know, like that the chef gave me a lot of shit and I was like really, you know, like in that moment of, oof, what did just happen here? You know, like, and then I would look at him and he would be laughing like, ah, look, you know, and I was like, wow, you know,
Jesus. Yeah, he was really toxic. He was really, really toxic. I was very happy when he got fired.
Hey, Phil, have you subscribed to our newsletter yet?
We have a newsletter. What's a newsletter about, Eric?
Every month we share one cool thing from the world of food and restaurants and occasionally a recipe we swore we'd never share, like your secret boiled egg lemon tart recipe.
But Eric, that was my grandma's secret recipe.
Not anymore. Subscribe to our newsletter where we unveil all of Phil's grandmother's secrets. This idea that a recipe, the more you do, is better, you know, like, you know, you can do a killer celery puree by just taking puree, water, and butter and salt. These four ingredients, and you can make an insanely good celery puree.
Absolutely.
You know, like, you just mandoline it, cook it just until it's puree consistent, not more than that, a little bit of salt, a little bit of butter, maybe just a little bit of the water you added to cook it with, to sweat it. And that's an amazing celery puree, you know, like, and you don't need 100%. To do much. And I'm saying this because recently I found, dude, like the recipe of the mushrooms of tamboril. And I actually replicated and it came out exactly like the way you get it in the bar.
Nice.
And it's something so stupidly simple that it feels like a cheat code. You know, like, I couldn't believe what it was. You know, like, basically, like, 99% of Basque recipes, you start with some sliced garlic that you throw to olive oil, right? Like, and some, like, and a little bit of dry chili, right? In this case, you would throw, like, some parsley stems, right? Like, 3 fingers of water, salt. You throw the mushrooms inside, you put a lid on it, and you leave it for 10 minutes. That's it.
That's crazy. You know, when somebody told me about that dish for the first time, I was like, that sounds shit. That sounds horrible. You know, champignon mushrooms boiled in water, and then you eat it on a soggy piece of bread. I was like, that does not sound good. And then I ate it for the first time, and I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, that is so tasty. That is such an amazing dish. Yeah, I think like what you're saying is totally true. I think it's a sign of experience and maturity of craft if you do less. There was this really nice cooking show on Netflix, Culinary Class Wars. Everybody's talking about it. Second season has come out fairly recently. And there's one contestant in there. I highly recommend you to watch it. It's really cool. All the contestants are like really, really good chefs. And there's one contestant in the second season who is a master of temple food. She's like this nun, 70 years old. And she cooks in a way like she doesn't care. She doesn't give a shit about what anybody else thinks or any trends. She only cooks vegetables. And she's like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. No care in the world, right? But she cooks in such a beautiful way, so simple. And like, I remember this like one thing where she's like julienning carrots and she's like, I'm going to cook the carrots without any seasoning for this because I want the natural sweetness of the carrot to really come out. And she's like cooking and the judges who are eating like different dishes from like Michelin star chefs and blah, and they're eating it and they're like, oh, wow, this is really nice, you know? And I thought it was like such a beautiful, she had such beautiful moments in that show because this is something that I realized first time I went to Japan also. The first like 2 weeks, I was like, man, everything's under seasoned. And then after a while, you start realizing the like deep flavor of ingredients, the natural flavor, and not just salt and acid and this, which is also nice, you know, but everything in balance.
Especially, I think, especially in German cuisine, like German fine dining, you know, Germans will be like, yeah, let's add some cream and some white wine and some vinegar and some butter and some black pepper and, you know, like, and all of that for whatever, you know, like, and it's like, sometimes you cannot just salt and water and get something really, really nice, you know?
Absolutely. I had this one dish in Italy one time that blew my mind. I'm not a big fan of zucchinis in general, right? Sometimes I like them, sometimes I don't too much. They're kind of like whatever, you know, eggies. And I ate a dish in Italy one time, and it was super nice. And it was just like big chunks of zucchini, quickly boiled in very heavily salted water. Just throw them in, boil, take them out, put them on a plate, let them steam off a little bit, and then a little squeeze of lemon juice and a bit of Parmesan on top. And it was the best zucchini, the texture and like the juiciness and that, man, it was amazing. And that, like these things make me realize how deep cooking is, you know, and how we as people, we like overcomplicate what ingredients are and what you have to do to them to make them shine. Potluck Food Talks!
All day, Potluck Food Talks! So, hi everyone. This is our favorite section.
Go fact yourself.
Go fact yourself.
You should peel ginger. And I've heard from someone that actually all the nutrients and the good stuff is in the skin. So then when microplaning a ginger, it's better if you do it with the skin.
I would say you don't have to. I very often don't. And I 100% believe that the skin, just like in apples or like other vegetables, contains a ton of nutrients and fiber. And especially like with like younger ginger, for sure, just use it, you know. With like older ginger, when it gets really woody, maybe peel it, you know. But in general, I don't think that you have to at all.
Yeah, actually, you know, as long as it's clean and doesn't have like strange whatever dirt or whatever, if that's the case, I will take it off and I would, you know, grate it with the skin.
Yeah. Actually, I just Googled it and Fuxia Dunlop, Chinese cooking expert, says, for maximum flavor, do not peel. So there you go.
There you go. Bam.
Bam.
Go fact yourself.
Go fact yourself.